comments made on the Serotalk podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotek Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast.
Serotalk podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotek Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Locke.
Welcome to Serotalk.
Well, live in the Namobile here. We're cruising around here. We just went over to Mikey's crib, checking out his recording studio. We're taking dibs over who's getting what.
In the ORL.
Yeah.
I got the Mac.
Well, we got J.J. Meadow here and Matt McCubbin, and we're...
I got the mixing board.
Yeah. Nice mixing board. So, guys, you had more time on the showroom floor, the exhibit hall area than I have thus far. Has anything wooed you, wowed you, or... made you yawn or what?
There's a lot of camera-based OCR solutions.
Again.
As we figured, that's kind of the next big thing. You know, there was first the digital audio book revolution, and now it's the camera scanner solution.
Let me rephrase it. A lot of companies think that's the next big thing.
I appreciate,
you know, OCR and access to that, but there are way too many misguided approaches to accomplishing that goal.
What are the price points?
Everywhere from... $20 to $2,500, and probably more than that. I guess that's probably I haven't even looked at. So they are all over the place on that point.
All over the place in speed and functionality. Some weren't even working. So I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens.
Some they would let you try out. Some they were too afraid to let you demo. They wanted to try them. They just wanted to show it to you.
Yeah, quite a bit of that. We have this product, and we'll tell you about it, but they won't really show it.
Can I try it? Oh, no, let me try it. Well, that doesn't help. And, you know, you find a lot of that, and it seems like a mantra that we've gone over time and time again, but you can tell right away when you have a product and you did not let a blind person or even a visually impaired person test out your product or think about whether your product would be useful before you brought it to market. If you're going to do a huge investment and come to a show which costs thousands of dollars to have a table and, you know, everything, all the costs that go into, you know, to presenting here, it seems to me you would talk to your target market. I'm sorry, GPS wants to talk. You would talk to your target market and you would figure out, you know, who you're marketing to and what they would really want in a product. And if you're going to invest that much money into coming here, you know, make it worthwhile.
Well, I mean, but you got to realize, I mean, sometimes a lot of these companies think that they know what we want as blind consumers. Instead of, you know, we did our latest application, DocuScan Plus, doing crowdsourcing, you know, where we really, really got involved with the community and used the community input right from the ground up in the product. And I don't see why other companies can't do that, but we certainly did, and I guess it shows. I haven't really been around too much to see the stuff.
Anything else? You talked a bit on your blind bargain.
Did somebody say something? Yeah, right.
No, you're right. Maybe they're going for a bottom line thing. Well, gee, government will buy this. I don't know. I don't know what the logic is. Why everyone's on the camera bandwagon? There certainly are some benefits to it, but people are going to use the technology they have as long as it works. So any new technology is going to take a couple of years to adopt.
I'm excited, though, about what I hear about the AI Squared product. I think that's really cool. I hope that they do well with it. I hope it does good for them. I think that, you know, for them to step out of kind of from where they've been, you know, this is a brand new area of business for them. So, I mean, I hope it works for them. I hope it sells a lot. I think it's a very, it's more than a fairly priced application for what it does, and I really hope it works out well for them. I know that at Serotalk, we're certainly going to promote the heck out of it, and if it does well, I mean, we'll use it ourselves. I mean, it's an awesome product. It sounds like
from what they've told us, they definitely don't want to release it until the bugs are worked out. So that's really good to hear. They want feedback. They're really looking to get some feedback regarding what features people would like to see in a video magnification app. So that's good. They were really interested in learning kind of more about voiceover So that was great to hear.
I do hope they realize the importance of making sure that it's not only a low vision product, which is the market they're used to serving, as well as a very useful product for totally blind people. And I know they don't have as much experience in that area, but I think they're learning and realizing that there really is a lot of potential for the app that they're creating to not only serve the low vision population, but also the totally blind population as well.
Yeah, the voice command capability, so that you can actually say take a picture instead of having to move your hand and cause jitter in the picture. Yeah, I think it's pretty awesome.
That would definitely help taking pictures. We were talking about possibly giving some feedback regarding taking pictures. Definitely a lot of potential. And for $20, I mean, you can't beat that. I was talking to some of my friends, and they were saying that they might just buy an iPhone just for that app if it works as a very good video magnifier.
That's a sign. That tells you it's a good app. If someone will buy a device to use an app, it's kind of like when people, especially several years ago, would buy a Braille note just for Sendero GPS. And that really tells you a lot about your app and how powerful and it is if people will buy a product just to use your program.
Anything else catch your attention? You talked a lot about Braille embossers. I know that's something that kind of interests you, although that's something really kind of hard to test unless you put one out in the field and really put it to
out of most of our price range. I kind of give a little bit of credit to Index. They seem to have broken a bit of a price barrier when it comes to high production embossers, and you have these really expensive $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 embossers that will print fast but were really expensive, and they came out with the Braille box, which at $13,000 still seems a lot of very high to us. But for a Braille production house, that embosser is spitting out 800 pages a minute. And for those people who need to produce...
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean for the price point, it's definitely to be commended that...
800 pages per minute?
Yep. So it works out...
A minute.
There's a 2011 for
damn! That's like
a new outtake file already.
800 pages, even 800 pages per hour, man. That's crazy.
So for an embosser that spends out 800 pages per hour, it still is pretty commendable.
Amazing!
Fantastic!
The bee's knees! Fantabulous!
I always wanted to be on a Serotalk
outtake.
Welcome to the Serotalk outtake.
Now, did you see much? There's a few companies demonstrating either new iOS software, or there's a company there called Grimba that actually writes iOS apps. What did you see in that space?
I did not see them. I'm not sure if Matt did.
Grimba.
Grembe.
Do the Grimba.
No idea.
They weren't in my program.
They definitely were not in my program.
They have three educational apps, but they also claim they will write iOS apps for you.
What are they listed under?
What's their booth number?
It's only the first day, though. So,
they had the Wednesday night preview this year. Come on. It's been 2 days now.
Well, I will go interview them tomorrow. This is only Thursday evening as we record this.
That's right. We'll get the scoop on it, guys. Ha!
We'll both be there.
Oh, yeah. We'll find your hidden websites in the blog post every single time. I want to give Bookshare a little bit of credit. I know they've always had a bit of an API for developers, but they seem to now be coming out really forthright, encouraging developers or anybody who wants to create a program, an app, or anything to interface with Bookshare's content to do so. And they really seem to be forthright about empowering people to do that. So if somebody says, hey, I think there should be a Bookshare app for this operating system or this platform, they're giving you the tools now to do that, and they're really encouraging and wanting to help people do that. So I like that approach. Definitely something I'd like to see perhaps more companies do with their content.
How do you guys feel about DAISY versus EPUB? I had a interesting discussion today with somebody about EPUB and DAISY, and I feel at least that DAISY, DAISY was a great idea, DAISY was a great concept, but it actually came of age at the same time as EPUB is coming of age, and I would submit that the probability that DAISY has actually become of age is because of EPUB. So should we as a community focus our advocacy efforts on increasing DAISY use or implementation, or should we focus our efforts on really helping publishers understand that EPUB needs to be more accessible?
Well, there was a time I thought EPUB was the answer, but obviously everyone wants their own technology. Amazon, they come out with their tools
But there's a standard. There is a standard.
Right.
There's different flavors of DRM.
And they will say DAISY is an extension of EPUB. It can be, yeah. I mean, that's what I've heard. I've heard people say, well, EPUB, you know, DAISY came from that, and XML, and it's all related. So if indeed that's true, I don't know. I say
focus on them both. I mean, if one company uses one, I mean, you know.
Yeah, but you can't, though, because, I mean, the deal is that when you get in front of a publisher, they're not going to want to spit out two different electronic versions of a text. So if you can build in, not to mention the fact that, you know, even if you, DAISY is still a blind ghetto, you know, creation, and it's going to stay in the realm of the Victor Stream and the, you know, and those types of devices. And as wonderful as those are, you know, I'd like to be able to buy books on the Kindle and read them, or on the Barnes & Noble reader, should they ever make it accessible, whatever. I mean, I certainly don't want to have to advocate for DAISY as well for stuff that's already available electronically. Boy, would that be a slap in the face.
Right, and I think one of the original intents of creating DAISY was to create a format that was completely accessible and had all the capabilities and features that we would need in advocating books. And why create that as a separate format when you really can work it into one of the existing formats like EPUB? And since EPUB is becoming more popular, you know, there really is no reason to continue promoting another format. Yeah, well, you're right. Why have two? If we can make one work and we can convince the right people, the trick is to getting into whoever makes the standards for EPUB and convincing them.
And I'm sorry, but you look at the price of some of these DAISY production tools. Dude, $5,000 for a production suite? You know?
Well, you look at some of the prices for even the DAISY players themselves. I mean, you know, you have, you know, them ranging from $314 up to $499.
Well, yeah, but at least, you know. But I mean, well, but if you, I mean, arguably, you know, you're gonna lay out $189 for a Kindle. Mm-hmm. You know, there's other ways to skin that cat, and they're certainly working on like iOS applications for DAISY and things like that. So, I mean, that's not as insulting as $5,000 for a production tool to develop DAISY. I don't understand that. I mean, I can't, we're back to, you know, let's charge a premium because it's for blind people.
Right, that definitely doesn't make sense on its own. I mean, if that's what we're doing, we need to reevaluate the format that we're promoting, and why are we doing that?
Just saying.
Anyone care anything about the screen reader developments? The big GW 7.5?
You can use JAWS 12 with iTunes.
Oh, wow. How cool is that?
But if you want to, let me tell you.
And now you can use Windows 7.5 with another Windows 7.5 user remote access.
There you go. But but back to the JAWS 12 for a minute. If you want to hear one of the best iTunes reviews in the world, listen to the December FS cast. And don't worry, because they didn't do anything special in JAWS to use iTunes at all. They just did it with its built-in accessibility out of the box. But Jonathan Mosen did his magic and did one of the best reviews ever of that product. So if you want to know how to use iTunes and hear all of its features, regardless of the screen reader you're using, listen to FSCast for December.
And definitely, he's always had a talent of taking a product and really pulling out its strengths and making things sound really good.
Yep.
And I think, are we here?
We're here.
All right, well, there you got it. Going mobile. Live from Orlando, Florida. Well, it's live at this moment anyway. Recorded when you hear it.
See ya.
Later.
Mikey's truck.
BlindMarkets.com.
Live at AETIA 2011, it's Michael Loff. And who better to speak with about software than a man who... It's in his name, Doug Hacker, VP of Development here at AI Squared, and we're going to talk about the forthcoming iOS app. Doug, we're very excited about it. Tell us what you're going to be bringing to the table.
Well, we've been working on this application we're calling Zoom Reader. And what Zoom Reader is an iPhone-based application that allows you to use your iPhone camera to take a picture. It then extracts the text from the picture via OCR and reads the text back to you with a natural-sounding voice. So it's a front-to-back application using state-of-the-art OCR and speech technologies, and we're very excited about it.
Okay, so how is this going to work? And by that, what I mean is not all iOS cameras are created equal. So am I correct to maybe assume that an iPhone 4 might do just a little bit better than the 3GS or...
Yep. In fact, because we have so many moving parts in technology, the first release will target only the iPhone 4. The iPhone 4 camera is certainly much better than the ones in the other devices, and the results are better. We'll probably move backwards with supporting older devices in a subsequent release, but out of the gate, I think we're going to try to get the app out with just iPhone 4 support.
Okay, so here's my big question, and maybe a lot of us blind folks don't really have the adequate lighting, so let's talk about what we need to equip ourselves with for good lighting in the room to get optimal OCR.
Right. Obviously OCR is all about the image quality. So the application does have some settings you can turn on. The iPhone itself will determine whether or not it wants to fire the flash for you. We can override that setting and make sure it fires the flash at all times. We can also turn the camera light on while you take a picture, if that helps. Some of it, OCR and image taking is such a fluid sort of thing. It's not like I can stand here and say, this is exactly what you need in all cases. So some of that is just your own experimentation, the situations you're in. But we've used flash photography, we've used, incandescent lighting, fluorescent lighting, we've played around with a lot of stuff. And, there are a lot of factors that go in, and it's a moving target. It's hard to say exactly what works the best.
Any tips on optimal placement, so many inches away from the camera?
Well, a couple of things that I can say. One of the things we've added is voice control to the application. So one of the issues I think most people have with taking a clear, focused image is the ability to hold their hand still. And if you have to reach your hand out to touch the shutter button, that often affects your ability to focus the camera. So we've added voice control as well as speech to it. So you can just say, take the picture, and use two hands to hold the camera still if you want to do that. What we found is we've limited the zooming up to about, we're playing around with between 6x and 8x, because once you get more than 8x on the iPhone, things start breaking apart a little bit since it's digital zoom. It depends on how much text you want to get in there. I've done successful OCR on an entire page of 8-point text, and that works fine. So it's, like I said, it's tough to just give it a certain parameter. It depends upon your situation or the thing you're trying to get OCR out of. I will say, let me finish one thing, though, is that we are actually using the Abby OCR engine, which is, Abby, as you know, is the market leader. They've been around for about 20 years.
Right.
We experimented with some open source engines. We found the Abby engine to be much more accurate and much faster than anything else we looked at.
Well, very good. Now, what about the touch? A lot of people got the touch, but is that going to be comparable to the 4? Really not.
No, it's really not. In optimal situations, the touch works. I think when we put out our marketing materials, we are most likely not going to say that the touch is a recommended device. Although the application runs on it and works under optimal conditions, I want to make sure that people know that the performance out of the iPhone is much better.
Okay, and of course we keep hearing rumors about the next iPad 2. And maybe even having front-facing camera with that.
We really hope that happens, although we are very excited about the iPod Touch. Right now, the specs on the iPad camera are speculation only. I think they're slightly better than the iPod Touch. So some of that, we'll see when it actually ships.
Okay, so the key here, you mentioned 6x to 8x. So in addition to actually reading it, there is enlargement.
Right. Once we extract the text from the document, for those people who can benefit from it, we can display it on the screen in 4 different font sizes. And we also do highlighting, so you can pick one of 6 different colors to highlight the text as we read it to you. We highlight a sentence at a time, so the text will appear in like yellow, red, green, blue highlight, whatever works for you. It automatically scrolls as it speaks to you, and so you get that added feedback of visually looking at the text that's been extracted.
Now, is this done, is it sent up to a server and converted, or is it done in the phone itself?
It's all done on the phone itself. We wanted to make sure, like I said, on the first release, that we had an application that worked everywhere. there are some benefits to doing some of that stuff in the cloud, processing power and stuff, and it's perhaps in a subsequent release we'll address some of those things. But right now we've put the Abbey engine resident, so everything works on the phone itself.
So does that take more time? I mean, I don't know how the processing power of the phone is.
It's surprisingly fast. We can do, you know, I'm doing paragraphs, you know, 6-7 sentence paragraphs in 5 or 6 seconds.
Oh, pretty good. Now, what about things like, you know, columnization? People try to do things like newspapers or... What kind of realistic documents can we throw at this thing?
We're not doing column support for this device. I don't think really the use case supports it quite as well. You know, it's the application is new. You have to remember some of the OCRing things that we've looked at on the desktop have been around for years and years. So we're trying to do more the portable, single, one-off use case and solve that problem and think about those things in subsequent reasons.
Right, mail, handouts, restaurant menus.
Exactly, things like that, flyers, you know, single paragraph, newspaper clippings, signs, things like that. Those all work really well.
Now, can it do anything that's beyond paper?
I'm not sure. Can you tell me what you mean?
I mean, so it scanned a paper document. I don't know if it could do anything beyond that.
Okay, I'll tell you a great story. About a week ago, we were in our office, and one of our employees was standing at the copier. Maury Hill, longtime employee of AI Square that many of you might know. Maury's visually impaired, and the copier jammed. And we have one of these fancy copiers that displays the error messages on the LCD screen of the copier. Maury was standing there with a portable video magnifier trying to read the error message, and she was unable to do it due to some LCD flickering and things like that. I walked over with my iPhone, snapped a picture of the error message, and read it back to her immediately. I think convinced Maury of the utility of the application right then.
Well, that would mean as well. If I could actually point it at a you know, non-talking computer screen, maybe it came up and went into BIOS instead. I mean, I don't know how large of an area it could read if it can actually do LCD. That's kind of exciting to me.
Yeah, we certainly support horizontal formats, too. We should try it. That's a nice thing I had never actually thought about. But, you know, when I read the error message on the copier, I thought this really is doing kind of what we want it to.
Well, even your phone, although some might argue, how would you take a picture of your phone screen? But I think you can actually do that.
You can take a screenshot of the thing on your phone, load it into the application from the camera roll, and have it extract the text. It actually does work.
So that could be, I'm trying to think of a way that if you know, VoiceOver wasn't working, maybe they could get use some other app or take it to another level.
Yeah,
this is exciting.
Probably, you could probably pull that off. It's interesting. I did that to test some things. So it is available, and we're using Nuance's speech engine. So we're not, you know, just to be clear, we're not using VoiceOver to read the text we extract. VoiceOver is active, obviously, within the application and all the controls if you're a VoiceOver user. But when we read the text, we're actually using Nuance's voice engine to read it. We're sending the text to it so that we can control the timing, so that we can do highlighting, we control the speech rate, and we have more granular control over the feedback coming back to the user.
So what are the buttons on the main screen? What will we see?
You'll see the first button you'll see is a voice control button. You can turn voice control on or off. And we've obviously spent time with VoiceOver, so it actually tells you what to do. Tap this button to turn voice control on or off. There's a button that allows you to choose a picture from the camera roll. There's the capture button that captures the image. There's also a color filtering button. So we do real-time color filtering out of the video stream so that you could change the image you're seeing to something like full color to, you know, black letters on white text or white letters on black text or blue letters on yellow text. And we make some of those things available as well.
So that's great for people of different visual acuity, different issues.
Exactly. And that's a feature that's been in some portable magnifiers, you know, single-use video magnifiers for a while. To my knowledge, this is the first application that I've seen on the iPhone that's actually doing real-time video filtering.
So I guess our two big questions I know the listeners will want to know is, A, your projected price and your projected release date.
Well, projected price is the exciting one, $19.99.
that's pretty good considering we're talking about a licensed Abbey engine as well as Nuon Speech.
Yep. Right? You know, we are, you know, we're giving up a lot of our potential profit to make what we think is the best use of technology out there. We think it's an exciting field to be in. We, you know, a lot of companies in the AT space talk about what's going on in the mobile world, but very few people have actually put something out there. We see this as a learning experience to figure out who the potential customers are, what kind of things they need, so we want to keep the price low. As far as release date, there's some approval time in the iPhone store, but I fully expect the application to be available in February.
Yeah, usually it's about a week, although it can go over 2 weeks, but usually 3-4 business days if you're lucky.
Last time we checked, it was 6 business days about 2 weeks ago.
Or sometimes the first release is a little longer, and then after that for your updates, they don't scrutinize as much.
Right.
But that's really awesome. Very excited about it. Do you have any email list or where can people go just to stay up to date and find out when it's actually released?
We've launched a special website. It's mobile.aisquared.com. So mobile.aisquared.com. You can see screenshots of the application. Shortly, you'll be able to see a video of the application in action. And that's where we'll have the news of the pending release date.
Very cool. And a link, I'm sure, over to the iTunes store.
Absolutely.
Folks can grab that. Doug Hacker, thanks a lot. Very excited. We will be looking forward to, what's the exact name of it?
Zoom Reader.
Zoom Reader. Is that one or two words?
One word.
One word. Capital Z, capital R?
Yes.
I know iTunes Store is a little picky sometimes, so I'm going to clarify that. Great. Thanks a lot. Live at ATIA 2011, this is Michael Loft for Serotalk. Live at ATIA 2011, this is Michael Loft, and caught up with Dan Wyrich here, and he's going to show us a demo of the forthcoming WindowEyes 7.5.
Right. Thanks for stopping by. We were just discussing the user interface. That's probably the biggest change that for users of WindowEyes, the first thing they're going to notice is the look and feel change, and it's a big improvement. I'm going to shift tab back to where
the
I started
change
from.
Is global gradient.
So what we have here, folks, is basically you hit Control / and you get like a Windows Explorer list view, tree view of all of the settings that you can make instead of having to go into all the different 6 or 7 menus like it currently has. So
right, so I can arrow up and down.
Keyboard, mouse, hotkeys, cursor keys closed 5 and 13. Hotkeys closed 4 and 13.
And if I right arrow,
can expand those.
36
right.
And Dan also mentions to me before we started recording here that one, I'm very excited about the fact that you can make all of your changes at once and then close it instead of in the past where you make a change, it pops you out, and then you got to go back into the menu and go somewhere else. So this is going to be a very, very nice enhancement.
Right. There's like a lot of Windows interfaces, I've got I can tab back and forth between the two parts of the dialog.
Save to disk as button.
I can save my changes, of course. I can arrow down.
Browse mode 1 of 6, step 2.
And if I wanted to make changes there, I'm just going to tab
browse
over.
Browse mode hotkeys colon. Link next PLCO-global is view 1 of 56.
So it said link. The next link is the hotkey is L, and that's global. So this user interface makes it very simple to make changes global or local. For example, we were talking just a moment ago about punctuation. Perhaps you want to make a change to WindowEyes to the way punctuation is read, and you want that specific to the program you're in or specific to everything globally.
So saved in the set format, or how does it work?
Yes, and the way the files are handled is a little different, and let's go back to
settings. Browse mode 1 of 6. Preview depth F. Open settings. O control O dialog.
So there are 3 menu items. First one's file, and it was open settings and
save settings.
Save settings. So that makes this very simple. The interface becomes much much simpler. There's also
app management to pull down.
This is another change. Because the WindowEyes is, as everyone knew, WindowEyes scripting, we introduced at 7.0, the scripts that we've had for WindowEyes have been very simple to create. and very simple to distribute. And one of the changes that we've made, which kind of better describes them, is now we're calling them applications. So now you're going to have a Windowize app as opposed to Windowize scripts. And part of the reason of that is just to identify how they're used, the simplicity, and that they're adding on to the power of Windowize. They're not required to make Windowize work. Some other products, you need a script for everything. You know, there's some other products out there that everybody assumes it's not going to work unless you have a script to make it work. But that's not the case with Windowize. I spoke with someone not too long ago, today at lunchtime, who was talking about Oracle and the software formerly known as PeopleSoft, and how Windowize, another program required a lot of scripting to work, and with Windowize, it worked pretty much out of the box.
Yeah, that's really what you want. I mean, the scripting power is there when you need it, and it's great when it works out of the box.
Right. With Windowize now, we're kind of identifying those scripts as apps to just explain and just better describe this adds functionality to Windowize.
Yeah, well, whenever you post them, just don't call it an app store, because you might have to fight with Apple and Microsoft.
You're right. So, we thought about that.
Yeah. So what other features? This is very exciting, but what else can we see in 7.5?
Well, we're just going to hit some of the highlights. I'm going to show you one thing that is also very exciting.
Documentation be pulled up. Remote assistants are pulled up.
Ah, remote assistants.
Remote assistants.
Right, so...
ask for help. A dialogue.
I just hit the right arrow, said ask for help, and then there's, of course, offer help. So this gives us a way for two people to assist each other. Someone's helping someone else use their computer, configure something, do whatever the case may be, offer some assistance, some technical help to that other person. So with this remote assistance, then, with the next version of Windowize, you'll be able to do that, offer help and ask for help.
So I don't want to assume anything. Are you saying this is going to come at no extra cost as long as both parties have 7.5, or how's it going to work?
That's correct. They need an internet connection, and that's correct.
Wow. Very exciting.
It's very exciting. I would like to demo it here. I can't demo it.
Right. You need another machine, obviously, to make that happen.
Yeah, and a good internet connection. So.
No, but that is a very powerful feature. What's a tentative release date here?
Oh, boy. That is the big question. And I hate to say soon, but that's actually the very truth. It will be very soon.
When it's ready, huh? That's a,
when it's
not before it's time, right?
That's right.
Oh, very good. Any other features?
Those are the top ones that I like to talk about today. But I do want to remind everyone to watch out at www.gwmicro.com. We're going to be posting information there. You're going to find out a lot about it. And, of course, you're welcome to call us. It's 260-489-3671. And ask us questions. We'll be able to help you as time gets closer.
Now, I don't know how long it's going on. You have a special right now to help people get upgraded to the latest version, right?
We're always offering upgrades to Windowize. Sure, and I think the easiest way, again, would also be contact us. We need to know what version you've got and things such as that.
Oh, exactly. Okay, well, very good, Dan. Thanks a lot for the information. Live at ATIA 2011, this is Michael Law for Serotalk. Live at ATIA 2011, this is Michael Loft, and I caught up here with James Higgins with RFB&D. We're going to talk about some latest developments with your organization. I think we'll start with the software you've come out to read your books on the Macintosh format.
Well, this year we were able to provide both PC and Mac software. It was created by GH, who's partnering with us at the booth here at, in Florida. And the great thing about the Mac software is it's native to the Mac environment, rather than taking existing PC software and converting it into a Mac format. This was specifically designed for the Mac user and have that native experience to what they're used to, as Mac people really enjoy Mac software.
So this is the same as a PC interface. I can actually browse through the titles, download them, and then play
the titles of interest, right?
That is correct. It's fully DAISY with the full DAISY navigation. It's very robust, and the real nice part about the software is it's forward compatible. And so if you decide to move forward to get the premium version from GH, you can upgrade that way. And as we start to develop new products and services, that software will play text-to-speech and some other things that we're looking to develop in the future.
And what's included in the upgrades?
That's a great question. I would really spend some time talking to the folks at GH, but I know that MathML is one of the things that they're really working on.
Okay.
But very robust.
Okay, now I know one of the features that has already been requested is the ability to speed up the books, which I understand you cannot do as of today, but that's something on the drawing board. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We're looking to have speed capabilities on it, and so we're always looking to improve it.
Okay, so what else is new? How many titles are you up to these days?
We're up to 65,000 books. As you know, most of our books, about 50,000, are in the textbook arena, but we have everything from Goodnight Moon to some advanced calculus. We do... for the kids right now, the Twilight series has been recorded, Harry Potter, and so we really want to have a nice variety of titles for all the individuals who can benefit from our program.
Is there any looking at actual iOS, or is it, again, something you have to talk to GH about?
There's
coming to the iPhone? And
there, I would say that we should be making some very positive announcements before, I'd say, hopefully by June in that arena.
Very good. Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right. Is there anything else you want to cover?
Well, I think that one of the things that we want to let you know is we've introduced on our website the MP3 player, and we've announced that the Philips Vibe Go Gear is great for some of the folks in the community who are looking for a low-cost solution. And the other thing we're doing is a lot more of webinars for schools and teaching. And the last thing I would say is if you haven't had a chance to go to rfbd.org, take a look at what's called the Training and Support Center. It's a great resource center for how to use the devices. There's recorded webinars for both the BVI community and the LD community and the top 10 questions. So we're really trying to support our members.
Great. Well, thanks a lot. Check it out, folks, at rfbd.org. Thank Live you. At ATIA 2011. For SeroTalk, this is Michael Loff. Live at ATIA 2011, it's Michael Loff, and I caught up with Thomas Freehoff here, and he is with BOM. There has been an initiative, the Open Braille Initiative, with at least five of the six major Braille display manufacturers to come up with a standard that screen reader makers could use to increase the level of support and compatibility and reliability when connecting Braille displays. What happened here yesterday on that subject?
Yeah, yesterday we had a presentation of the current findings and the current results that the Open Braille Group has developed over the last year. Last year here at ATIA, we formed our group. And the group is formed by, now in alphabetical order, Baum of Germany, Eurobraille in France, Handytech in Germany, Unionware in North America, and Optelec. We are five important makers of Braille displays, and we think Braille is underutilized, and if a customer has an expensive Braille display, he still does not have the option that very many applications will support these Braille displays. And understanding that, we came up with the slogan, we want more applications to talk Braille. Many people really like speech synthesizer and have the computer talk to them, but we would like that applications can talk Braille. And the situation so far is that if an application manufacturer, if a programmer of an OCR package or a GPS package or whatever package wants to support a Braille display, he needs to contact the Braille display manufacturers of his choice, needs to knock at their door, try to get the documentation of the API or a DLL, and then he has to support very many Braille displays, need to think of what keys they have, and tons of problems. So... that if we are lucky, such an application will support one model or two models of Braille displays, but not the Braille display models available and maybe not the Braille display model the customer has.
So what has been done in terms of coming up with the actual standards or an API that, say, companies like our Serotech, you know, would make products like SamNet with mobile network and so forth that we could tap into and make that available on a Braille display?
Thanks to an initiative of Optelec, they have prepared a specification for a USB HID Braille usage page. This is a very complicated term. USB HID Braille usage
page. Right. Well, right now, that's all we're supporting are the HID, or the human interface devices. So
correct. But what you are doing, or what's currently possible on this HID usage pages, is you still have to talk to the manufacturer of the device, which is able to talk HID and understand which feature reports and functions he is supporting there. There's no standardization between the Braille display manufacturers what to talk on this HID protocol. And the HID usage page, which Optelec has been defined and the other manufacturers have been commented to and enhanced, is the first step to have a common connectivity for Braille displays. In the older days, Braille displays had either interface card, serial, or parallel ports to connect to the computer. And later on, manufacturers came up with USB interfaces where you always had to pop in a CD to install drivers. The beauty of USB HID is that HID support is implemented in most operating systems, especially the Windows operating system, but also Linux and Apple OS X, and USB HID devices can be used and accessed by applications without installing a driver. So, but this was not really that what we wanted to offer to application providers which want to offer applications support which can talk Braille. We, in this group, we implemented a Braille server API, which has some roots in the Braille server which we are using in our Cobra screen reader, but it's a completely different and new developed product. And this Braille server API allows for understanding and decoding the USB HID information, and it also allows for plugin structure so that Braille display manufacturers can provide a plugin into this Braille server API so that on top of the Braille server also older devices show up as modern open Braille supporting devices. The Braille server API, which we implemented, we carefully made sure that many usage scenarios are possible. So we are also supporting a portable scenario where this Braille server can be utilized without installation and run from USB sticks. The Braille server API, and I don't think I need to go into details here, has, so as we think, all necessary functions for all foreseeable applications in the moment, so that also a simple print interface is possible, so that if there's an application outside who does not want to think so much about what to do with a Braille display, an application can simply output Braille, and also very high developed interface for screen readers to decode keys, put partial areas of dots on the Braille display, and things like that. And another important aspect of this Braille server API is that we are supporting the usage of this Braille server API also as a non-screen reader standalone application. So we are doing arbitration between the different clients of the Braille server. And if you have an OCR application, the OCR application, if it's in foreground and wants to produce Braille, it owns the Braille display and it gets keyboard input. But if you tab away to Word or another application, the screen reader can seamlessly take over without the need of implementing script support in the screen reader or something for these self-brailing applications. Also, multiple self-brailing applications are possible, and a screen reader can step back and allow for another screen reader to become the main screen reader solution there. I think this is very interesting. This is a very interesting development, and we as Braille display manufacturers are very interested that this functionality is available, because we do good business-wise if there are lots of application outside there which shows the benefit of Braille and the usage possibilities of Braille without the conflicts of the past.
Very good. We're very excited about this. We certainly want to see this as well. What is the website for people to learn more information?
It's www.openbraille.org.
Okay, and is there links there for
links
the developers
for
to go into the server?
Links for documentation, things like that is there, and our goal. We are currently at version 0.5.2, and for CSUN, we plan to invite all screen reader manufacturers for sessions and presentation of this Braille server system.
Live at ATIA 2011, it's Michael Off. We stopped by the booth here of Optilec, and we're going to talk about their products, but we're going to start with a very interesting reading device here that kind of looks like a boombox, but you actually kind of raise the camera up from the front and just lay your paper down on the table right here and press this scan button. I assume it'll work, and I say that only because we stopped in a document. This is the brochure, so it's an 8.5 by 11 inch piece of paper. And within a few seconds, it's going to begin reading it. And you have four voices, right? You have the...
You're moving your hand, so it's detecting that
the camera's detecting my hand. That's my fault, folks.
Okay, that's a shadow, and it's automatically waiting until the image is...
So let me... I've stepped back from it. That was my...
Product highlights, ultra slim and stylish design. Interface with a PC, Apple's iProducts and smartphones. 8-dot Braille keyboard, feature pack. High-resolution Braille. Smooth surface Braille array. Split-point Braille array allows use of multiple devices at once.
A brochure long-range of our other product.
Right, so there you go. Here, it also has Samantha, as Tom. Did you say two other voices?
We currently have, you get four voices. Let's stop it. Four voices. Out of 12 languages and 23 voices. So you can have Australian, English, and German, and French, and Spanish. And
so let's describe this to people. You got speakers on the front. That's why I said it kind of has that boombox feel. You got a big round button here on the right. In the center of it's where you press to scan. Is this a dial? Can you?
Yeah, that's the volume.
Right. So you also adjust the volume, and over here is a button. You actually turn
speed.
To choose between voices, right?
No, that's the speed.
The speed. Okay. Yeah. And then you have buttons. What, three buttons here?
Yeah, play, back, and forward.
Right. You have that old kind of cassette feel to them, and like I said, the camera that comes up from the front, and you just push it down, and it. It's an interesting device. So what does this run on?
It's embedded, so it's embedded OS.
I don't mean the OS as much as... does this run on batteries?
It's battery-powered, yeah. Okay. It runs 5 hours. That's in the brochure, but we see that it runs for 7 hours.
Okay.
So it runs on batteries. Yeah,
I see.
And it's portable.
It's very portable. What is the weight of this? I didn't pick it up, but
I think it's
has a handle.
Pounds, I think it's 4 pounds. Or
about
something.
4 pounds, yeah. about two kilos, and it's got a handle on the top. You can pick it up. I believe I see a USB port here, right?
There is a USB SD card. There is. We will at CSUN we will release magnification, so you can connect a monitor up to it. And navigate text, view images, save documents on the SD card or on a USB stick, open text files, and all those kind of features.
Yeah, so that brings up two questions. How much data, how many pages can I store on it now?
Now it's not storing anything.
Okay.
Because it's so fast. It reads within 2-3 seconds. So it probably takes longer to find a document back, but a lot of people want to store their documents, so we will come up with a save feature and open text files and things like that.
Right, and decide what formats it'll support and things of that sort.
TXT.
Text. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, is this currently available for sale, or is this a prototype?
No, this is available.
Okay.
already for a few months, and so it's shipping since I think September.
And you said the price was around $2,500.
Yeah.
And the name of this is
Killia Reader.
Killia Reader.
Yeah.
Cool. This is a cool product. I like the portability of it. Can this camera read anything other than the printed page?
No, it only reads printed documents.
Okay, but so you couldn't like lay an LCD screen down in front of it and have it.
It depends on you know how clear it is. So yeah, it has its own built-in light, so it does its own light, and it also detects movement like before your
right
hand
with
was,
my hand. That's that's why I asked that.
Yeah, so it's waiting till we have a clear image, and then it takes the picture. So it's very clever.
But somebody will have it lined up to see if it'll read the TV screen, But
We had people reading iPhone screens with it, and it did work. So.
Okay. Well, there's a big demand for some of us geeks to read computer screens sometimes when there's no speech, and we want to know why there's no speech. Is it in a BIOS or F8 prompt or, what's going on there? So.
I didn't try it.
Right, but that's not its design, but it is.
No, it's a big chance it will do. It will try to read it, yeah.
Oh, very cool. Well, let's talk about some of the other items you're showing here from Optelec this year at ATIA.
Yeah, we have the BC640 and the BC680 Alpha Brill displays. So that are our 40 and 80 cell Brill displays. I have an 80 cell here. Bluetooth.
Bluetooth. It's long and very slim.
It's portable, but it's long.
Yeah, it is long.
Because it's 80 cells. It has our own Brill cells. We produce our own Brill cells. It has one surface Brill cap, as we call it. It's very smooth. And what you can do with this device, and that's unique, really, you can connect. There are two USB ports, two USB connections and one Bluetooth connection. And you can connect two PCs and read them at the same time and also interact with them at the same time.
Oh, nice.
So basically you can say, okay, I want two 40s or a 40 and a 50 and a 30 or...
Oh, nice.
And split the display into two segments and really interact with both of them. And if you connect a keyboard to it, because it has a keyboard connection, you can work with two PCs at the same time. And also review both screens at the same time. So this really brings multitasking to Brill users.
Yes, I use that a lot, actually. I have two machines, an XP and a Windows 7, or even two Windows 7s.
Yeah, and you could, you even could do that with one machine, with a virtual machine, and connect two Brill displays. So.
Oh, good point. Good point.
Yeah.
Is that working on Mac, or is it strictly in a Windows environment?
It's working on Mac, it's working on Linux, it's working with Symbian, it's working with, what else do we have?
I guess Linux,
major,
for the few folks still using that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because we use HID, as it's called. So
yeah, human interface device, HID compliant, very good.
Yeah. And we will soon also support Open Brill, the project we are working on.
Yes, we just did an interview with Thomas from Balm on that, and I'm very excited about that that initiative.
Yeah, and we together with Balm have our first prototype Brill displays or Brill display available now, which runs the first version of Open Brill.
Yeah, very cool. Very excited about that as a screen reader manufacturer to be able to deploy that and greatly increase the number of supported Braille displays. So what else are you showing here?
This is the Vision Cube booth. So Optelec products at the Vision Cube booth.
Okay, well, that's good to point out. Yeah. Well,
because Vision Cube is distributing our Braille products in the United States. We also are showing the EasyLink 12. A small portable Braille display with 12 cells and Braille input keys, which is already for some time on the market, but has really gained an interest with the release of real support in on iPhones.
That's what I was going to say, exactly. To have something like that to read your SMS messages or something portable, something small.
Yeah.
It's giving it all new popularity.
Yeah, yes. Right. So that's what we show here. And then Optelec has a full range of CCTVs and portable CCTVs. We just released new firmware for our FarView product. That's a portable magnifier with which you can capture documents and store documents and magnify them and read them later. But you can also take pictures of slides and or a presentation and review them. So if you cannot read the presentation because it's too far away, you can just take a picture and zoom in and follow along in a presentation if you are in college or in...
Yeah, really good in the classroom environment to look at a board or something across the room, exactly.
Yeah. And we just released new firmware for that to make it easier for people to find back their pictures and to be faster in taking pictures. Better scrolling of the text if you capture documents. So that's new. And then we have the CCTVs with we have HD quality, and we just released an update for that as well. To be able to really read across the full page, so people that have RPs and need small magnification but need contrast, they can view the page instantly without having to move the XY table or navigate with the document.
Very good. So that's just some of the new stuff you have from Optelec. You can check it out at their website, optelec.com. Of course, distributed here in the U.S. by VisionQ. And you go to their website as well. Of course, get all of the links along with this and other great podcasts from ATIA at Cerotalk, Cerotalk.com. Ivar, thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with us this morning.
Thank you, too.
All right. Live at ATIA 2011 for Cerotalk, this is Michael Loff. Live at ATIA 2011, this is Michael Loff, and I'm speaking now with Liz Persaud and, what do you call this here, the Pass It On Center?
Yes.
Okay. Describe what you do here.
The Pass It On Center is a national initiative, and we're the technical assistance and coordination center for all of the assistive technology reuse programs in the country as well as the six territories. And basically, we want to make sure that all the AT reuse programs are putting forth successful practices, best practices on the different aspects of their program. So sanitization, delivery of equipment, storage, collection, matching the equipment to individuals, so on and so forth.
So I guess I thought from the name that what you're doing is if someone's no longer using AT equipment, that it gets back to some kind of clearinghouse in that state and then someone else can use it so they don't waste money purchasing technology that they may already have in hand.
Absolutely. You know, and the whole thing of, you know, even trying before you buy, you know, a lot of times people will buy equipment and it's not the right fit for them or, you know, not the right things that they need to use. So this is another way of going about doing that. But why not? If somebody's using a chair, they no longer need it, why not get it in a condition that they can use it again, you know, that somebody else can use it, and it be, you know, moved on to the next person.
Well, sometimes someone gets it and then they have a, you know, they either leave the earth or go into a facility, nursing home, or maybe somewhere they don't need it, so it's a short stay, so the equipment really hasn't had that much use, so
exactly.
This can make sure that it's utilized by someone else. So this is intriguing to me because it's a statewide, you have a network that goes throughout the U.S., like you said, in the six territories, so that's interesting how all that works. Are all states participating in this? I've never heard of it before.
Well, we work closely with the Assistive Technology Act programs, and within the Tech Act, part of their grant initiatives are to do AT reuse activities. So within every state, I think there are probably just a handful, maybe even less at this point, of states that don't really have any reuse programs on our database, but that doesn't mean they don't exist. On the Pass It On Center website, there's a link to reuse locations. It's a map of the U.S., of the country, and you can click on any state and just find the reuse program in your community that's doing any number of these activities.
So what is a website or phone number that someone could reach you and maybe get involved? Maybe there's an agency that has this equipment and wants to make sure they get into the network.
Yep. The Pass It On Center website is www.passitoncenter.org, and our number is 1-800-497-8665.
Well, very good, Liz. Thanks a lot. It sounds like this is a great organization. I hope folks will pursue this if they have working access technology that maybe they no longer need and want to get it in the hands of someone who can use or benefit it. And maybe states, even larger organizations that maybe not aware that this exists, or maybe employers that bought equipment for someone and then they no longer have that person working there but don't want to see the equipment go to waste. Maybe they can, you can write that off their taxes, maybe. I don't know how that works, but check it out at passitoncenter.org. Thanks a lot, Liz.
Thank you.
Live at ATIA 2011 for Cerro Talk, this is Michael Loff. Live at ATIA 2011, this is Michael Loff, and I caught up here with Beyond from Index Braille, and he has a new product recently released called the Braille Box that does 800 pages an hour. This is a workhorse for those who need something like that, but I'll let Beyond here explain the product and as well as some other things that you're offering from Index Braille.
Yeah, the Braille Box is a unique product. It's really changing the market. Today, a printer like this will be more like $50,000 or $100,000. This is $12,995. It uses standard paper, so you can use 11 by 17 inch paper or letter size paper, and it have a magazine, like a copy machine, so you can load it with 300 to 400 papers, and then it goes through the printing system and folds down in a pile.
Ooh, very nice. So you can load about a half hour's worth of work in it, right? Say 400 pages.
Actually, if you have the biggest size, then on each paper you produce 4 pages of Braille. So it will end up with, say, about 1,200 pages. So a little bit, 1.5 hours or so.
Okay, very good. And this is $12,995. I believe I just heard it printing. It's pretty quiet.
Yes, it's a new... The design here is, you can say, the first combination of Braille embosser and acoustic cabinet in one. This is a pre-production. It will be on the market by May, this spring. So this is the first one ever shown for public.
Oh, very cool. Okay. And like I said, $12,995. So folks who are into higher production Braille embossing, this is certainly a valuable tool to look at for that purpose. What about software? Does it work with just a variety of software on the market, or do you throw any software with it? Or
With the printer, we do deliver the drivers, and then they can use basically anything. You can use Duxbury or Megadots or Braille 2000 or whatever.
Is this strictly in the Windows, or can you use this on the Macintosh?
Both Windows and Macintosh. We have drivers for both, and the printer come with USB and network, so you can network it to an IP port directly on the network.
Oh, very good. So you could put it on your whole network and let anyone send documents to it as necessary.
Certainly, and you can also have a web server on board, so if you have it remote, you can monitor the status of the embosser via the website server on board, like a modern copy machine or a modern router.
Very cool. So let's talk about some of the other products that Index has to offer.
Yeah, we have two other products. One is called the Basic D, and one is the Everest. This is what we call the version 4, and the version 4 is the technology step from version 3, which is from 2001 to 2010, basically. So everything is better, smarter, and have more functionality than before. For the user point of view, the basic is, the basic stuff for tracker-fed paper, double-sided, 100 CPS, have everything you need, graphics and so on.
Okay, very good. So what is the phone number and website for folks to learn more about your products?
The website is www.indexbraille.com.
Okay, indexbraille.com. So check it out, folks. It's called the Braille Box, a new device under $13,000. It's going to let you do 800 pages an hour. And there are other great products. Live at ATIA 2011 for Cerro Talk, this is Michael Loff. Live at ATIA 2011, it's Michael Loff, and caught up with Mike Tyndale here with HumanWare. And we're going to talk about some of the latest developments and what are you guys showing here at ATIA this year? What's new, I should say.
Hi there, Mike. It's good to be here. Always good to be on Sarah Talk. This year at HumanWare, we're showing our new version 9.1 of the KeySoft for the Braille Note, which will be released in February of 2011. We're very happy to say that we now have really good Word support. We can show you all your formatters, as well as with the Braille Note, you can make all of your edits on the Braille Note, send it over to a computer, make edits there, send it back, and continue to do that process, and everything opens and plays real nicely with the computer and with the Braille Note. Also, on KeySoft 9.1, we're going to have NLS, so we can play NLS books from Bard. Also, there's a new security feature there where we can now put a password on the Braille Note to lock it so that other people can't get in there and see your information. And the last thing we've done with KeySoft version 9.1 is we've made your wireless connection much easier to connect. In the past, we've had to, you know a lot about your wireless encryption and is it WPA or WEP. Now that's answered for you when you go in to set up your wireless connection. All you really need to know now is the password if you have encryption set. We also do support WPA2 in this latest build. And so that's the latest changes with KeySoft. And with the Trekker Breeze, back late last year, we did release the new update to your Trekker Breeze that now allows you to enter an address. So you can not only create landmarks and be guided to those landmarks using a Trekker Breeze, but you can also go to a specific address by using the keys on the Breeze. You would do it just as you would do a text message where, like the Where Am I key, for example, is your big center key. That's ABC, and then the key describer key is DEF, and so on. So you use those keys much like you would text. On the stream, we still have our soft pack that we're promoting. The soft pack is an additional feature that you can add to your stream, and it will give you the ability to play iTunes. New EPUB books is now supported. It will also play DocX files. You can play Enhanced Audible. If you have the soft pack, and the last thing the soft pack does for you that's been benefiting a lot of people in colleges and high school recording their classroom lectures is that you can now record in both WAVE and MP3 format, so you don't have to use the Stream Companion to convert those audio files into WAVE. You now have the choice of MP3 and WAVE. We also have a new Stream Companion, so you want to go up to our website and download that. If you have PDF files, you can. There's a converter in there that will transfer those accessible files into a text file, so that you can read those files seamlessly on your stream. We've also enhanced our Stream Companion, where now it will search for both stream updates and Stream Companion software updates for you and download those directly to your card so you don't have to go to our website. That can all be done from the Stream Companion. So on the low vision side, we have a new CCTV that we're showing this year called the 360. It's a 19-inch screen with a camera that basically rotates 360 degrees. We'll give you self-viewing, of course, down for documents, and it will also provide distance viewing for you. So those are the new things from HumanWare at ATIA. It's always glad to see you, Michael. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Mike Tyndale, live at ATIA 2011. It's Michael Loft for Sarah Talk. Live at ATIA 2011, this is Michael Loft speaking with Jeff Johnson from Grembe, G-R-E-M-B-E. And not only do they produce three different applications, I think mainly, if I'm correct, in the educational sector, iOS applications, but also you have a service where you actually will develop iOS apps for companies, and I've had a few people ask me about resources for that, so I want to talk about that.
All right, sounds good.
So tell me, how does that work? I come to you...
Yeah, sure. It's with an idea. You know, we normally talk over the phone or through Skype, sort of get an idea for the scope of what you're trying to achieve with your app. Sort of get a feel for how long it's going to take and really sort of try and nail down the details of what you want your app to do. You know, maybe some things you didn't think of or, you know, sort of really figure out the detail of how a screen's going to look, how it's going to flow into another screen, get a feel for the UI, how many screens there's going to be, how much graphic work needs to be done, you know, behind the scenes or illustration work, and sort of scope out the project and, you know, how complex it's going to be.
Right, so how do you determine price then? I assume there's a base fee, and then there's based on the number of hours you project it's going to take? Or
I'd say it works better on a fee basis for sort of how many weeks it's going to take, and, you know, we take it from there. It's normally a one-time fee.
Okay, once you assess what they want, and then how much time it's going to take, and then set your price, and they agree or not, right?
Okay. Yep, exactly, and then we sort of might take it to more detail or, you know, try and figure out some of the more details later on, too.
And you are familiar with coding for maximum accessibility with VoiceOver?
Yep.
Okay, very good. So let's talk about the three, or maybe there's more, but there's three apps I saw on the website particularly that you're maybe showing here. And these are kind of in the educational space, right?
Yeah, well, really what we originally made it because our son got so much benefit out of using visual schedules. You know, we'd write him on a piece of paper, stick figures, an arrow, his school, or stick figures and arrow in his play, you know, our car, to relieve his anxiety. And he also had delayed verbal, so that helped him so much. I had the first generation iPhone, and I'm a software engineer, and said, why don't I code something like that for the iPhone, take real world pictures, record custom audio behind him, and create these visual schedules. So we have an app called iCommunicate that does just that, takes real world pictures, symbols, or any pictures that you load onto the device, and allows you to create them into boards, you know, whether it's going to be a choice board, a visual schedule, one that shows routines. You know, we have one where we show you one picture at a time, and you can add a check mark to help with transitions, and that's what that app's all about. And we have another app for social stories, where you collect pictures, audio, and video into stories, whether it's you going to the zoo, or it's you trying to use video modeling to show expected or wanted behaviors. You can have strings of video put together that show, you know, good behavior. And then we have another app where it's a visual token board type app where you can receive up to, you know, 20 tokens for a certain behavior, and you can include a picture of the reward or the behavior you're trying to reinforce. And that one's called iReward.
Oh, cool. Okay, so let's talk about how people can contact you either for purchasing any of these or if they would like to have an app developed to such time to meet with you.
Yeah, sure. So all our apps are available up on the App Store, so through Apple. And you can contact us at Grembe.com, GREMBE.com, or JJohnson@Grembe.com. We'll get right to me, and I'll get right back to him.
Very cool. Well, thanks a lot, Jeff. I know a lot of folks will be interested in that, so we wanted to share that when we look through the itinerary here. And we wish you great success. Are you going to be at CSUN as well?
Probably not this year.
Okay, you have to pick your conferences, certainly. Yes.
I'm a small app developer.
I understand, my friend. I certainly do. But we'll get it out to a few thousand folks for you, maybe some business. And
sounds good.
All right. Can't argue with that. Well, folks, that's what we got here at Grembe. And we'll cover a little bit more here live at ATIA 2011. For Cerro Talk, this is Michael Love.
You've been listening to Cerro Talk. Visit us at www.cerrotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@cerrotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.